Ryan Sanders is the filmmaker behind the Food Lies documentary, host of the top five nutrition podcast, Peak Human, and an international speaker. He graduated from UCLA with a degree in mechanical engineering. Found it. I'm also an engineer, but I've never done any of my engineering degree at all. He's the founder of Sapien Center, a popular health club in Austin. He also works to spread the awareness of regenerative agriculture and increase access to well-raised animal products through his nationwide meat and body care company, Nose to Tail. Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. All this stuff right up my alley, especially on the engineering thing. So tell me how someone who was a mechanical engineer ended up focusing on diet and nutrition.
Yeah, I never thought I'd end up here. It's actually a kind of a sad story. It was 10 years ago, I lost both my parents.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I was just going about my life, you know, like everyone else does, kind of like an NPC, you know, just being a non-player character in the world, eating what the government told me to eat, and had this big shock. And so around me, some of my friends started changing their health, and they just did these simple things. They just actually read Mark Sisson's book, The Primal Blueprint, and they cut out seed oils that added sugars and refined grains, and their whole life changed, and I did the same. And so, I basically think that my parents were victims of the food pyramid and just of the modern sick care system, because they did what they were told. Our whole lives, we ate the foods that we were told to eat. We ate the low-fat products. We ate the whole wheat pasta and the whole wheat rice and lean chicken and low-fat dairy, the whole thing.
So you weren't necessarily eating the standard American diet, which is
no,
like
not the bad
foods
diet.
And, yeah, right. Yeah, there's like two different versions. There's the eating as Americans typically eat, and then there's eating what the FDA and the USDA recommend.
Exactly. And we were doing the good version. I grew up on Oahu, and we didn't have like tons of money. It wasn't like we were some rich family. We didn't have money to go out to eat all the time. So we were just making our own meals, stuff like that, right? We made it from scratch. We did what we're told. And they got sicker and sicker each year, right? It wasn't like they were obese and completely diabetic. They just went along their life and they had pre-diabetes, now that I know and I look back. And the CDC even says that 9 out of 10 people who have pre-diabetes don't know it.
Wow.
Like, we're so bad at diagnosing this. So people, they just get like the visceral fat buildup. You get a little dad bod, that belly.
Yeah.
That people think it's funny and cute and it's a whole meme.
Yeah,
that's not funny at all. I mean, that's pre-diabetes. That's basically your metabolic health tanking. And so they got these modern chronic diseases. And now my whole goal is to not have that happen to myself and just spread awareness about how we can, yeah, change our health ideas as a nation and a world.
How, if you don't mind me asking, what were the like specific things that they passed away from?
Oh, yeah. So my dad was prostate cancer. My mom's Alzheimer's. She's actually still alive, but she's been unresponsive for 3 years.
Oh.
Completely unresponsive. So, but these things people just say are genetic. They're like, oh, cancer's genetic, or Alzheimer's, that's just genetic. Absolutely not. This is all to do with your metabolic health, what you eat, your diet, your lifestyle, how you live.
Right. So I know that in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and I mean, even persisting today, there was a big push to get people to believe that fat, like fat of all types, are bad and we should cut fat out of our diets, right? So when you grew up eating the way that you ate and you sort of started coming to the conclusion that what my parents were dealing with might have been diet related, what were some of the things that you came across that were shocking to you with respect to nutrition initially?
Well, yeah, you have to unlearn everything. I think it's good that I didn't come from the nutrition world. I'm not a doctor. A lot of my friends are doctors, actually, and they didn't believe me because I'm just a mechanical engineer. You know, I'm just some guy that was telling them that they're wrong. But it kind of makes sense. Not really, but I see where they're coming from. They think that all calories are the same. And then they say, oh, well, fat has more calories per gram than carbs, so fat's a problem. They also think, oh, well, we looked at arteries and we can see cholesterol in them, therefore you shouldn't eat cholesterol. I mean, these are just really basic ideas that don't turn out to be true.
Are you familiar with how they determine like caloric intake for human beings? Because if you look into that, it is absolutely insane.
Are you talking about just like the bomb calorimeter type stuff where they're just like burn? Well,
yes.
How they even come up with calories? They just burn food and it's like this has this much potential energy in it.
Right.
And yeah. Oh, it's absurd. I think the biggest lie if you're trying to look, it's called Food Lies, right? My account's called Food Lies, film's called Food Lies, everything's Food Lies, is that calorie is a calorie.
Right.
That's, I think if people think that, then everything goes wrong. And that's what we've seen in the last, say, 80 years of bad nutrition advice.
Yeah, it's so machinistic to take. I mean, it's just like how with most biological sciences, they're studying something in an isolated context for the sake of virology, not isolated. Mm-hmm. But the point is, in a context that is separate from a complex biological, physical, chemical, emotional, spiritual being, and assuming that what they're determining in that setting can be applied to us. And it's the same when it comes to calories and a lot of nutrition science too, right?
It is. I think modern science, they get really myopic. It's like they spent the last 50 years trying to figure out why red meat was bad, when it's not bad. And then
they already had the presupposition. That's the thing.
Right, they already had the presupposition.
So they wanted to go out to prove that it was.
Then they end up with things like TMAO or mTOR and TMAO. So they're like, oh, well, red meat has TMAO, or you produce more TMAO in your gut. But then fish, it has more TMAO. So everyone agrees that fish is good. So now, you know, they get really myopic and they don't understand that, well, you need to look at more of a guiding light of nutrition and health. And if you're saying that red meat's bad, you're already on the wrong track,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're not looking at the big picture. You're stuck in this lab trying to find these tiny compounds that might make certain foods bad or not. When you don't say, there's a very easy system to know what's good or bad. And then you can check it from there. It's like, what have we been eating for the longest part of history?
I always say this to people, would you determine, and I got this from a friend of mine, Daniel Roytas, who's a brilliant naturopathic doctor based out of Australia. And what he said is, how do you determine the appropriate diet for an elephant as an example? It's like, well, you observe elephants across the world throughout time. And what are they eating? Right. Okay. So when you do the same thing with human beings, what are they eating throughout history over time in different areas?
It's so obvious. It's animal foods and it's whole foods. Mm. And that's the answer. So I spent the last 10 years on this journey and I'm just back to, well, what's a good diet? It's animal foods and whole foods.
Mm.
And so that's the same thing you asked about fat. Well, what fat have we been eating for all of history? Well, we only had one fat for most of history, for all of history, until the last 100 years when we invented seed oils and we made this process in, was like 1912 or something.
Mm.
So before that, all we had was natural fats, and it could have been olive oil, coconut oil, some of these, you know, avocado oil. These are more natural oils that are probably okay. And then we had animal fat, and that's just what we had. And so, yeah, there's a great doctor, Michael Rose, who's in my film. He spent his whole career, 40 plus years at UC Davis, studying longevity. He's kind of a legend in the longevity space. He thinks that humans could live to 160 years old. Easy.
I totally believe it. I mean, if you look at some of the biblical stories, and a lot of people say, oh, they're stretching time and the biblical stories of people living to be 600 mm-hmm. and things like this. And I'm like, I actually don't think so. I think that that's how we used to live. And I don't know if the Bible is entirely literal or it's all an allegory or a mix of the in between. But the point is, like, I think we have been misled on how long we can live as human beings. And not only that, I think that this idea that with the advent of modern medicine in general, that we're outliving our ancestors, how do we actually know that that's true?
We don't. And I looked into this a little bit, and how we determine how old we have these fossils, or we have, you know, these old bones, and we actually just make a judgment. There is nothing in the bones that tells you how long this person lived. But what they do is they look at the wear and tear on those bones, and then they correlate it to modern humans. And they're like, okay, a modern 60-year-old has worn down bones, so this person must have been 60, which is crazy, because I've visited the hunter-gatherers. There's dudes that are 60 out there running and hunting and
like sprinting.
Yeah. And it's like, so they don't have the worn out, terrible bones of a modern human.
Right.
It's a completely different paradigm. So yes, this guy, Dr. Michael Rose, believes that yes, all species do best on the diet that they ate for all of history. He's like, it's very simple. He thinks that we lived much longer. And yeah, there's a lot to it. Just even with the average age of death, you know, with there's all this infant mortality that, you know, people died younger. They died of all different things, right? It was a pretty harsh world. Some of you die in accidents, and there's like all kinds of reasons they died that wasn't from nutrition.
Yeah, you get a misdirected view, or, you know, just a misunderstanding of what actually was leading to infant mortality and the low lower lifespans in some places, right?
Well, yeah. So, and if you do take the average, yes, it might have been 35, but that's just because so many infants died, mm-hmm. and then so many other people could live to 100, and then you take the average, it could have been 35. Right,
exactly.
So that's one big thing. Actually, I think this is one of the other big lies. I think that to keep the modern paradigm of, well, processed foods are fine and this whole sick care system, they need to make people think that our ancestors died young.
Right.
If they keep this notion, because that's the first pushback I get. I talk to people all around. I've been around the world talking to people making this film series. And they're always like, well, why do I want to eat like my caveman? You know, I don't want to eat like a caveman. They died at 35. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
These people lived much longer than us. We know that humans can live to 120. There's modern people that live to 120.
Yeah.
Right? So we know that the human body is capable of that. And
right.
that's in the modern world with the modern toxins everywhere, bad foods. These are the people... And what? Well, they grew up on eggs and bacon. You know, these people, they're like, I eat eggs and bacon every day. And, you know, I drink my coffee. And they even like, I had a little scotch, you know, every
right,
night.
Or like some cigarettes a little bit here
yeah,
and there. Yeah.
They were just more resilient. They had this foundation of nutrition from right. growing up back when the world was cleaner. And, so we know we can live to 120. So if we had the best conditions possible, this is another Michael Rhodes concept. He said, well, yeah, I mean, if we had all the conditions, the perfect clean water, the perfect clean air, the perfect clean food, he's like 160 easy.
Wow. I mean, I believe it, man. I totally believe it. So again, as you were discovering all these misconceptions, you said it was much easier for you because you weren't formally trained in quote nutrition or formally trained as a medical doctor or another type of medical professional. When you learned the importance of eating fat, was that like a huge shocker to you, or did it just make sense off the jump?
Well, so yeah, as an engineer, I look at the root cause. You look at systems thinking. There's actually a lot of engineers in my little health world.
Systems engineer.
There's multiple.
I look back at my educational experience and I say all the time that I went to the world's preeminent government indoctrination camp, United States Military Academy at West Point, because that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I am very grateful that I majored in systems engineering because it gave me, it helped cultivate a way of thinking that a lot of other people don't think like in terms of systems processes and how things sort of fit together to form an optimal solution, all about optimization. And then also gave me proficiency in reading scientific papers and really understanding what they say.
Exactly. And so my doctor friends that came out of the matrix, so they admit now that they were just indoctrinated. So what is medical school? It's like 10 years of indoctrination of right. how to prescribe pills and procedures. And they're never looking at root cause. It's actually the opposite incentive to, it's like, if you find the root cause of something that goes against the entire medical paradigm and all the pharma and everything.
Right.
So it's like, they're incentivized to not do the root cause and to just treat the symptoms. So yes, I think I'm very thankful that I came at it from this weird angle. And I think that's why there's a lot of engineers in this true health movement, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I don't call it alternative health. Because it's not the alternative. It is the true health. It is the primary.
Well, I've heard you say on another podcast or reel or something like that, and we'll get to what the mm-hmm. Sapien Center is, but it's all about becoming human again. And it's like, I don't look at it as alternative health either. This is health. This is what produces healthy people. I mean, all the events that I host or the events that I attend, you walk around the crowd and you ask people their age, and they've been living a holistic / natural lifestyle for the majority of their lives. It's like, oh my God, you're 60?
Mm-hmm.
You look like you're like 40. Or you find that it's really common in this space.
I'm
sure you see it at the Sapien Center too.
Oh yeah. Well, Michael Rhodes. So I saw a presentation he did. You can look up, anyone listening, go on the internet, find Dr. Michael Rhodes. And there's a presentation he did. And if someone gave me $1 million to guess his age, I wouldn't go over 45. He was 65 in that presentation. And yeah, I mean, I'm 40 now. People think I'm in my 30s.
Dude, I'm 31. I would guess that you're my age.
Yeah. So it's like the proof is in the pudding, right? You just, once you know this stuff, you can't go back.
No.
Right? Like, so that's why the people come out of the matrix and there's no like, oh, well, now I'm going to go back. Nope.
No.
This is the new paradigm. Yeah.
A good friend of mine, Dr. Tom Cowan, said something to me the other day that resonated so much with respect to truth. A good way to, or a good, I guess, metric to possibly determine whether something's true is the flow of people converting from one belief system to the other. And you don't ever, I mean, take something like vaccines. I can say that because I say it all the time on this podcast. You very rarely, if ever at all, see someone who was previously against vaccines become pro-vaccines. But you always, like, constantly see people who were previously pro-vaccine become anti-vaccine. The same can be said for nutrition sciences in a lot of ways too.
I always say that about veganism. It's a kind of a one-way street. First, you're in the standard American world. Then you become nutritionally aware. And sometimes you become plant-based, right? And you get some health. You're like, oh, this is amazing. I feel better. I'm eating real foods. You can lose weight. I don't deny it. There's a good path to setting your intentions and, like, actually focusing on your health, doing things intentionally, all that type of stuff. But then a lot of them get terrible conditions. They have all kinds of problems. I collect all of these people. Well, they all come to me because I'm in a more animal-based world.
I mean, it makes sense given that you do what you do.
And I know that I see much more of these people than normal, but I see that they would never go back. They heal. They go to the animal-based diet. Sometimes they have to go full carnivore just to heal from all the problems from the vegan diet. So they will never go back. I mean, they will eat plants again. That's not what I'm talking about, but they never go back to, like, okay.
One example that is contrary to that, but overwhelmingly, I completely agree. And it's funny because I actually interviewed him yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And I'll bring up some of that stuff, but I overwhelmingly agree with you. And he would even say the same thing that, like, he was previously vegan for some time and then his hormones became absolutely wrecked. So then he started eating nose to tail grass-fed, grass-finished beef, was eating basically a ribeye every day for 2.5 years straight. And he was doing incredible on that diet, but for spiritual reasons, he's now adopted a nuanced approach, which I want to get to at the end, but, because it is interesting and it was compelling, some of the things that he was saying. And I'm saying that as a meat eater myself, who's very big on eating grass fed, grass finished, nose to tail. So we'll save that for the end, but, how did we get to this point in the nutrition world? I know that's a very broad overarching question, but how did we get to the point where the FDA, the USDA have created such a behemoth of misinformation surrounding diet and convinced the world within the last really 50 to 60 years that all of these things that are fundamentally beneficial for health throughout time are bad for us? And in a total inversion of what health actually looks like. I know that's a very big question.
Oh, no. I think about this all the time. I love the big questions. I always think at the highest level, like, how can we understand things? Like, how did we get here? Why are we so fansick? Or how did this start? And there is a long story we do share it in the film, because it does go back about 80 years, actually, to the 1950s when President Eisenhower had a heart attack. And this was when people were smoking indoors with their baby in the car. They were the Crisco, like all these trans fats and the seed oils were just coming into the diet in a big way. And so they were trying to figure out, why does everyone have heart disease? And to me, it's obvious. It was smoking, and we started eating more and more processed foods and bad oils. But there was another guy that thought it was saturated fat, and his name was Ansel Keys. And there was another guy named John Yudkin that thought it was sugar, flour, and oil. So he was from England, and he said everywhere that the commerce, the trading, you know, England was had a big empire and they're trading all around the world. Whenever these foods of commerce, which was the sugar, flour, oil, came in, that's when the populations got sick. So he's like, guys, this is very obvious what's going on. And it's this displacement. There's also Weston A. Price went around the world. People probably heard of him. He's a legend. And we found the same thing. Whenever these empty foods came in, these poor nutrition, empty foods, and they displaced real food, people got sick. So,
and he was looking at it from a dietary or from a dental context, right? Like the people's palates were becoming smaller and smaller across a few generations within areas that were eating this way. And he was trying, he had the presupposition that it was tied to diet. So he started looking around the world and found that people who were eating primarily animal products and eating nose to tail had these larger palates with very developed jaws.
Exactly. Yeah. He was a dentist. And he found that not only with the crowding, the small arches, but cavities, right? And then he would see that the cavities were actually not just because there was sugar in your mouth. It was because of a lack of fat soluble vitamins and good nutrition. And yo, I could talk for hours about him. I mean, he found all these separate populations. He went all over the world, completely disconnected populations, right? That had no possible way of talking to each other. And they did the same things, especially around pregnancy. And they would eat nose to tail. They would be eating organ meats. They'd be giving pregnant women liver, and they would give them this eggs and the raw dairy, or, you know, whatever they had, the most nutrient dense animal foods they had around, they would be giving, even men, they would be giving them if they wanted to start having kids. They knew that it would help them.
Help boost fertility for men.
Boost testosterone. I mean, now it all makes sense. So he's amazing. But back to the story. So the question is how did this all happen, right? So it's like, so we had some bad ideas, right? So we went away from nature. We went away from real foods. We started getting the processed foods. Then I always look back and I always think, is this an accident? And is it just because of big corporations and money? Or was this sort of on purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And the more I look into how the world works, the more I think it was on purpose.
And that's the big question when it comes to any of these things, man.
Yeah, because it could have happened by, quote, accident, right? So we could have just gotten the things wrong, right? Ansel Keys versus John Yudkin. Ansel Keys won. They had this whole McGovern committee. They said, okay, we need to reduce fat. We need to reduce saturated fat, cholesterol. So then that opened the door to the food industry. They're like, okay, well, now we can't use these products. So we need to shove sugar and grains into everything to make them low fat. And that turned out to be very profitable. Mm-hmm. So you keep mentioning Nose to Tail, which is the name of my company, right? So we do regenerative ag and we don't make any money. I'm actually winding down the meat business because it's so hard because there's no profit margin. So I learned how the world works.
Is that because the barrier to entry, because the whole agricultural sector is so steeped in these traditional practices for farming, or is it just because that's just how it is in reality?
It's kind of both. Wow. So it is hard because corn, wheat, and soy is subsidized in factory farms and the whole thing, and it's really cheap to do it that way. And then these big companies, the only people making money in the real food space are like Cargill and these giant meat conglomerations, and same thing with Whole Foods. There's not many people making Whole Foods, but maybe some giant tomato manufacturer is making enough money by selling millions and millions of tomatoes, and then they could make, you know, a few cents on each. But what I figured out very acutely is that this is why the world works the way it is, because of the high profit margin on processed foods, and that there's no profit margin on Whole Foods. So if you have this huge profit margin on processed foods, you can do all the lobbying in Washington. You could do all the marketing and blanket, you know, the world with these advertisements saying your products are great. And you can do the fund the fake studies that try to show that they're okay. So it is because of that. So you could say it's an accident, right? We had this bad idea that saturated fat was wrong. Then that opened up the door to these low fat products, super high profit margin. And then they kept getting, these corporations kept getting bigger and bigger off of all these profits because, yeah, you can make shelf stable, nutritionless products, huge profit margin. I think the cereal, the box costs more than the cereal, right? Wow. You have like 3 cents of cereal, the box is 4 cents, and you sell it for $6, right?
God.
Like that's huge.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to like raise an animal properly, harvest it, package it, get it to the consumer. You're not going to get a profit margin on that. I'm telling you.
And then also the steep learning curve of getting people to understand like, okay, I know liver might not be as palatable, but it's still super nutrient dense and it's a good like support for your own liver. So you probably should eat it. That's also, you know, a barrier.
It's huge barrier, small market. Yeah. You have a small amount of people that actually understand that. So it's uphill battle. And so I think a lot of it is just big industry, corporate greed, the whole thing, the food systems, just like big pharma and sick care, it's actually the exact incentives are misaligned. It's the exact opposite of what they want is what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually figured out how this is why the whole world works the way it is. But I'll start with the food. So they want you to keep eating, right? They want you to buy more products. And there's only so much you can buy in a day, right? I mean, it's not like I can get double the amount of food. Well, some people do and they become obese. But there's a market share. So how do they need to get you to eat more of something? And this is through hundreds of interviews I've done with doctors, scientists, nutrition people who get it, not the bad ones. And I've understood that food is about getting protein and nutrients, right? And then you have energy, which is the fats and carbs. And so the best way to be full and eat properly and lose weight is to get all of your protein and nutrients with the right amount of fats and carbs, right? So this is how you do this, by just eating real foods. So the opposite way. So how do you get, and that's how you're satiated, right? So it's like, if I eat meat and eggs and sauerkraut and pickles and fruit and whatever else I eat, some potatoes, I am full correctly, right? Mm-hmm. These foods are not processed. They have the correct satiety in them. So what's the opposite of that? A bag of chips. So Doritos being the worst. And I interviewed the guy that wrote The Dorito Effect. It's a great book that kind of explains this too. So with each bite, you almost get hungrier because there's no nutrition. So I'm trying to go a level deeper because a lot of people talk about hyperpalatable foods and like, oh, hyperpalatable foods are bad. Well, I eat steak that's hyperpalatable.
Right.
It is delicious. I can cook a steak. You know what I mean? Like, I get the right seasoning. I cook it the right way. It is delicious. But I eat that steak and I am done. After, if someone offered me another steak, I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm full.
Right.
But if you eat a whole bunch of Pringles or Doritos, you just keep eating. People just do it. That's the whole thing, is they're just eating, eating, eating. So it's beyond just that they're hyperpalatable. It's that they are tricking your body into having nothing in it that your body wants. So you keep eating to get there.
Right.
Right. So, okay. So this is a longer point to get to how they work. So their incentive is to get you to eat more and more and more and never be satiated. So how you do that is the less nutrition you put in a food, the more you'll eat of it because your body will keep eating. The incentives are diametrically opposed.
I've never thought of it like that. And that makes so much sense. And then you wonder if it's intentional or not, right?
I think it's kind of intentional.
Like nefarious or not. Like, I would say intentional is, it's probably intentional, but like whether it's nefarious intentions or not.
Well, that's the next level. It's like, I don't think Doritos, you know, the CEO of Doritos is like, how can I kill the world?
Right.
The CEO of Doritos is, how can we sell more Doritos?
Right.
That's their whole goal, obviously, to their shareholders. So they just discovered the less and less nutrition we put in, the more fake flavors that trick your body into thinking you're getting nutrition, the better we do. So that's the thing with the Dorito effect, is there's all these MSG, right? Why is that bad? I mean, it could cause headaches. You know, it could have some individual problems with it. But I think a bigger reason it's bad, because it tricks your body into thinking it's getting nutrition. For all of history, if you ate something that tasted that umami taste, right, that tasted savory, that meant you were getting nutrients, right? You're eating meat, you're eating an egg,
it's
eating
like
fish.
Biologically inside of us that,
yes,
that is.
We know. Right. Yes, we know. We're like, I am getting protein.
Right.
Like even the Eskimos, I think they have, it's called like meat hunger and then like hunger, like other hunger.
Interesting.
And it's like they have protein hunger. They're like, we need protein. This is a different kind of hunger. We have a different word for this.
But that's what a lot of vegans experience.
Always. That's what I always. And for me, yeah, if I'm out at an event and they have this, like, there's like no meat around, this low protein meal, like I feel terrible. I feel hungry and I'm eating more and I just don't even want to eat in the first place because I know that I'm not going to be satiated. So, that's why people eat too much, basically, to zoom out. It's like, why, if your nutrients are never satisfied, you're just going to keep eating.
Mm.
So this is the incredible stuff that I learned. And I don't think I would have learned this if I was just in the medical paradigm, right? This is why it takes engineers coming at it from a different angle or
totally,
you know, learning. So there's these studies they did with mice, right? And they gave them the rodent chow, whatever it was, right? It's like 14% protein and then it had carbs and fat. Okay, they gave it to the group A. They ate the right amount. They're fine. They were the right weight. They had the offspring. They died at the right time. Then they did the other group and they just lowered the protein percentage in the feed. So maybe down to 11%. I'm not getting these numbers right. I forget the study already. The details of this study, but right. Yeah.
General
so
point.
They, so say so they had, it was the same type of feed, right? The same type of protein, same fats, same carbs, but in a different ratio. They gave them 11% protein, which is not enough for a mouse. And then, so it therefore had a little more fat and carbs in it. That group ate way more of it and became obese, had less offspring and died earlier.
Wow.
So this, and when they did the math, they looked at group A and they're like, okay, whatever it is, they ate this amount of protein per day. They looked at group B, they ate the same amount of protein per day. They just had to eat more of the food to get there. This was a game changer for my understanding of nutrition and why we are the way it is. That's what your question, how did we end up here? And that is one of the big answers, is if you lower the protein and nutrients, because usually the nutrients come along with the protein, right? Again, for all of history, if we ate fish and eggs and meat, whatever, that protein came along with all those nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And then nowadays you can get nutrientless food and your body will still be looking for those nutrients. So you can actually do the math. There's another guy, Dr. Ted Naiman, who I love, and he's just a family medicine doctor. He doesn't like really make money or have a big agenda. He's just telling people the simple truth. And he was actually a mechanical engineer as well. Before he got an MD, he was an engineer. And
that's why he's more awake.
He was also vegetarian. His is before and after. He was the sickly looking vegetarian. Same
way. Was he eating like organic in that context as a vegetarian, or was he eating?
He's probably just whatever vegetarian.
Yeah, that's always an issue when it comes to any of
these things too. It is, but there's so many factors. But still, he was pale. He was flabby. He looked terrible. He had poor health, and he would say 170. Then he changed his diet completely, went more into animal foods, still ate plenty of vegetables. You know, I'm not saying vegetables, there's anything wrong with them. He's just a completely different body composition and health, right? He's ripped. He's like 50. He doesn't have a lot of time. He's a doctor and he's still doing it all. But it's just that shift in his dietary makeup changed everything. And what he enlightened me to is that he looked at all this data. I don't know if this is in a study, that the protein percentage of the U.S. went in the last, I don't know, 40, 50 years, went from like 15% to 12%. It was something similar to the rodent study. And we just had to eat more empty calories to get the same amount of protein. And that can explain everything. Not that it does explain everything, but
you could say there's a strong correlation there between that and then the skyrocketing and all these chronic issues and obesity, et cetera.
There's so much more to it. And you know that, right? There's like all the lifestyle factors. There's so many different things with the organic.
Yeah,
or
we've
not
become
chemical.
More sedentary over the last
so
like
many things,
50 years.
But that can explain the rise of obesity. If you do the math, it's like how much extra food did someone have to eat when you dropped the diet? And that's exactly what happened. And a lot of people blame seed oils, which I think are unnatural and terrible. But then I think this is kind of the underlying reason why they're bad almost is that, well, they're the wrong kind of fat for humans, but also that same rise, you can see this uptick in the amount of seed oils, and that went along with the obesity, mm-hmm. but that's also that went along with the extra calories that people ate that are empty.
Yeah.
So when we went from 15% protein to 12% protein, what was replaced? A whole bunch of seed oils with nothing in them and refined grains and just added sugar. So you basically pumped in a bunch of empty calories that also are bad for your health and your gut and everything, and lowered the amount of real food.
Right. That makes so much sense. What about in Asian cultures historically who did eat, like use sesame seed oil a lot in their dishes? What about that?
So you can like just smash sesame seeds and get oil. For one thing, it is sort of a natural oil. Like the seed oils now have like a 16-step or 12-step process.
Yeah, you see those
hexane
charts.
Solvents.
It's like actually it's crazy what they have to go through.
Another thing, they're not using that in high amounts. I mean, I use a little sesame oil. I mean, I don't have a problem because I'm using like a tiny bit.
So it's not like that, because there seems to be almost a narrative now, and I think overwhelmingly this is leaning in the direction of more true, that seed oils are bad full stop. And it's not that that's the case. It's that there's context that's necessary there when it comes to seed oils themselves.
It's the amount of them. It's if they're oxidized. Yeah. It's like if they're in a fryer in McDonald's for weeks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm not like panicked about like a little sesame oil.
Right.
Right. And like you said, like people, they did use it, but you didn't have like a gallon jug of sesame oil.
Right.
No, it's very potent, right? It has a strong flavor. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem, actually, Asian countries are doing very poorly nowadays because they start using tons of soybean oil and these bad oils.
Yeah, that makes sense too. What did you learn when you spent time with the Hadza? Because I've always wanted to talk to someone who actually has spent time with him. And I've talked to Paul Saladino twice, but for some reason I didn't make a point to bring it up with him that much. So I don't know why I didn't, but I'm so excited to hear about your experience.
I was with Paul when he went with the Hadza. So we set up that trip. And he joined on, but he went early and he had his whole experience. And then he kind of got sick eating the berries and went home. It was this whole thing.
What do you think he got sick from eating the berries from?
I think that they ate a small amount of those. The Hadza did, and they're used to them. And they ate like a whole bush. Okay. they were like eating them like crazy.
Are you familiar with pleomorphism when it comes to bacteria?
No.
Okay. So it's that, bacteria and fungi have a life cycle where they will change form and shape and type depending on the role that is presented to them. So I have this theory, you could say, for why Americans, when they go to other places, they get sick by eating or consuming the things that the locals are consuming, not getting sick. And it's because you're giving the bacteria in your gut a new type of thing that they're not used to. So they have to pleomorph into a different type of bacteria to consume that, which means that those bacteria are then also doing another role of feeding on the toxins that are present in your gut that they weren't able to decompose previously because you didn't have the necessary input of the terrain in order to, you know, pleomorph into that type of bacteria. But that could be totally wrong. But it's interesting.
No, it sounds kind of right. I mean, that's my take on things. It's just that you're not used to it. It's
right.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I went to Peru and drank the water on accident and I felt sick, but obviously people there, they drink the water. They're fine.
Right.
Same thing with the Hadza. So this was crazy. They barely drink water, which is unbelievable. I think they have a kind of different metabolism.
Wow.
And they don't eat a lot of salt either. So they have just sort of different metabolism. They're just eating fresh meat and fresh organs and they just don't need a lot of water. But when they did need water, they had the younger one. It was all men. Some of them were up to like 60. And then they had the one like 15-year-old who was like joining the men's group hunting with them. And he would climb up a baobab tree and scoop out, there was like a half of a shell of something, and scoop out this brown water. And he'd like lower it down and each person would just take a little sip and they were good for the whole day.
That's it. That's all they would
brown
drink.
Brown water. Yeah.
What?
It's crazy. And then, or they will dig in the sand until you get down to water. And then again, it's brown.
Yeah.
And then they just sip a little bit of it.
Wow. I bet it's pretty mineral rich at that point.
Oh, yeah. And they're just used to it.
That is so interesting though. Cause especially like I look at a lot of people in America, from what I know, is like chronically dehydrated. And I think like dehydration a lot of times can lead to aging. And that's so interesting.
Well, I think no, it's because it's what you're eating.
Right.
So salt gets a bad rap, right? Mm. Because everyone's eating processed foods that are loaded with salt. It's not the salt, right? It's the processed foods and it's just like the makeup of your diet and your metabolism.
Yeah.
You know, it changes. So if you're not eating, like if you're eating a real whole foods diet, I mean, I dump salt on everything,
right?
And I have perfect blood pressure. So it's the same thing with water. I think, of course, you're going to be dehydrated. If you're like actually living in this modern world, lots of toxins, lots of bad foods, then you do need more water. And you should, you will be dehydrated if you don't drink enough water.
I would say also being exposed to non-native electromagnetic fields. And I mean, we're sitting in a freaking studio right now, yeah, exposed to like 100 of them. But the point is that like the Hadza people aren't exposed to that. So that's probably not disrupting their like internal water, the water that's in their body, because we're, you know, comprised largely of water. So I'd imagine that has a huge impact on Western cultures too.
I think it does. So it's just all the things that attack your body if you don't have those. That's why I think we can live to 160. We didn't have any of these things attacking our body.
Right.
Right. And then you need far less water. And yeah, I mean, they're getting fresh meat. They're getting some of the blood. There's like some water in that, but it's just a different metabolism. Right. I don't know if anyone studied this, but they are not dehydrated. You know what I mean? They get what they need.
That's crazy. And I would imagine their cardiovascular health is like awesome through the chart.
They went forever. So we went on this 8-hour hunt with them and we had to turn back. It's because we didn't have enough water ourselves. See, yeah, like I still need water. It's not like I have this amazing metabolism they have. So one of the guys I was with almost died. I mean, he was like blacking out. Like it was.
This is another Western guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it was a journey. And so so the whole thing was 8 hours for us. We barely made it back. We drank like three bottles. We were just chugging water. Even our driver, we had a safari vehicle driver guy, our guide, and he was about to die. But these guys went on without us, finally cut us loose. And so they could actually have a successful hunt. I think we were just holding them back.
Right.
And they got a baboon. Actually, so they brought back this baboon and I did not want to eat it. I ate this little tick. They had like a little deer.
Yeah.
And we ate that and they gave me the liver immediately. And
did you eat it raw?
Yeah.
Did they eat it raw?
They eat it raw. Okay. Yeah. So immediately I opened it up and they shared it. It was just like I read about, right? They share the liver. Everyone gets it raw in the beginning. Mostly the men get it. Unfortunately, the women are back somewhere else. And they each have their own knife. They have almost no worldly possessions. They make their own arrows, make their own bow. All they have is a knife that they like trade for with this other group that kind of fashions metal. And a lot of times they'll have shorts. Western shorts because shorts are pretty hard to make. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a hard thing to make out of hide.
Totally.
Or anything. So they have like these old khaki shorts.
Or like some Lakers basketball shorts.
No, not these guys. Yeah, yeah.
Those are so funny though if like you're hunting with
them. Closer to town, yes. Closer to town, they have that. But these guys are out of town.
Yeah.
And they just have like the khaki shorts. And so yeah, this dirty knife, they're like cutting things open on a rock. People talk about the microbiome and a lot of, I think of our bad ideas about nutrition science come from the Hadza. And these scientists went there and they're like, oh, they're eating 100 different types of plants and they're eating so much fiber. They have such a good microbiome. And I think I didn't see them eating any plants, the men, and they were eating off the ground. They were, you know, dirty knife. This is why I think they have a good microbiome. They're living with nature.
Right.
And then with the fiber story, I'm not against fiber. I mean, I understand. I think fiber is actually a proxy for people who eat whole foods. So there's a lot of epidemiology showing that people who eat more fiber are healthier. Well, all that tells me is that people who eat whole foods are healthier.
Yeah.
Right? If you're eating processed foods, that like I think it's just as simple as that.
Right.
And it does make sense. I'm like, yeah, of course. Like fiber means you're getting the whole food. And it's not that the fiber is magical. It's that eating food in its whole form is magical. It has the structure it needs. It has the full water. Like once you start breaking down carbohydrates, especially, it actually is, if you grind down protein or fat, it actually doesn't get worse for you. Like if you just take meat and then make it into sausage, it's not worse for you.
Yeah.
Right. But with carbohydrates, it is worse for you. The finer you grind it, the more it hits your metabolism, it hits your gut. There's all these GLP-1.
What do you think about juices then?
Not great. Not great. A lot of people, yeah, have problems, but it can be. That's dependent
for like cleansing, because I know a lot of people who've done juice cleanse. I've done a juice cleanse myself, and at that time, I mean, the cleanse itself was challenging, but afterwards I felt great after doing a cleanse.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of context there too. Mm. It's like that if you're doing a juice cleanse, you're not getting that many calories for the day.
Right.
Right. Good so it's point. Like, yes, you will have like, if you strap someone to a CGM, continuous glucose monitor, and you drink all these juices, your blood glucose would probably be all over the place. But I mean, for an acute period, that's okay. Juice is bad because it's a highly refined source of energy that people do daily, and then it becomes bad, right? Like I really only look at diet in this macroscopic view of like over the course of a month, right? Like I can drink juice. I have no problem eating a little sesame oil if I'm going to make something Asian. I don't have a problem having an orange juice once in a while, right? It's not harmful for me, and it actually helps me stay sane, you know, and be normal. If like, you know, I go to a dinner party, I'm not like, oh my God, like, well, I can't have any of this. You know, I just enjoy the food.
I know
people.
That feeling though.
Yeah. Well, still, I mean, yeah, if the food's like really terrible, I don't want it.
Right.
But you know, if someone's like cooking me something and it's fine, you know, I'm going to eat it. So it's more of that, the month term or like the long term. And if you're just constantly drinking juices, it's just a refined source of energy, right? Energy could be from fats or carbs, right? So I don't want to like pick out carbs as being bad. But if you refine them, they just hit your body differently. Your gut interacts with them differently and produces higher glucose spikes and higher insulin spikes. And so why do people become diabetic? I mean, it's just years and years of eating processed foods.
Right.
Eating like, well, these people aren't drinking juices. They're probably drinking sodas and like terrible stuff. Right. So if you're on this constant thing with your blood sugar going all over the place, it's bad.
Right. Going back to the Hadza, I want to know more about how the intentionality of their hunting practices and did you notice any, let's say, reverence for the life of the animal to a degree that we don't appreciate here when we have access to farmers who can get us grass-fed, grass-finished beef like right down the road, especially being in Texas where we are?
So for them, it's their way of life. So I didn't see like prayer ceremonies or anything. I think it's more with the Native Americans. I've heard a lot about this and they have a lot of those ceremonies. I don't remember seeing that, but when we're talking to them, it like this is just their absolute only thing they care about is just getting the animal. And I mean, they have great reverence for them when they talk about them. I just don't know if they do.
Maybe it's like an unspoken thing or something.
Yeah,
it must be
because they just rely on these animals. It's just like all they care about. We actually asked them, like, would you want to like go back to a city with us? Or like, they just have no interest. They're like, no, like this is just not what we want to do at all. They actually, they're on, it's almost like their life is a permanent vacation.
Wow.
Like they just, they sit around the fire, they're eating, they're playing music, they're talking. Like all they do is just hang out and then go hunt. What's really cool about the hunting too is they just go.
Yeah.
Like we were there. It wasn't like they're like, oh, we should go hunting today. Or there's like some leader. It's like, okay, now it's time to go hunting. They just, we're just sitting there and we're kind of like, okay, we're just milling around. And then they just start running. And then they just went. And we're like, all right, I guess we're following
just
them.
Just out of nowhere. They're just like, all right, time to go. Was it one of them or was it kind of all of them at the same
time?
They
just all kind of go. And this is what I heard about too, is that they don't have these structures that we have, you know, they do have a leader, but he's not like, okay,
not
guys.
An authoritarian either. No, though, yeah. I imagine. Yeah.
It was great. And then, and the women, I was going to make a point about the fiber too. I got off on that sidetrack, but the fiber, the women. So we went and hung out with the women later and they were eating these big tubers. Right. And I heard about this, right. They dig up tubers and they
root vegetables, right. That's what tubers are.
Yeah. And what they have is these really big tubers that were really fibrous. So it's not like a sweet potato. It's like this giant thing. And they cook it on the fire, so it kind of like breaks down a little bit and becomes more bioavailable. And then they just gnaw on it, and then they spit out all the fiber. So they're actually not eating the fiber. There's just getting some of the glucose, right? They're just getting some of the nutrients. So again, they're sitting on the ground. They're eating with nature. Like people think that fiber is magical, and they think that these Hadza have great microbiomes because of the fiber. And I'm sure that's part of it. And they're eating a diverse, I get it too. But it's, I think it's more that they are eating off the ground. They're getting all these gut microbiome. Like their microbiome is good because it's in nature. Americans' gut microbiome is bad because we're eating processed foods or we're living in a city.
I mean, it's also our whole lifestyle. We're completely everything's disconnected about it. From nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just aside from their microbiome and their gut health, what else did you notice about their, let's say, health in general from a mind, body, and spirit context?
Mm. They're just at peace, I think. It's not like I'm an expert in the Hadza, you know? I don't want to, like, overstate, but from what I saw, they're on permanent vacation. They were at peace. They were without want. I saw what humans are supposed to do.
Wow.
Right? Like, I know now what it feels like to be human. Like now I have this whole new paradigm of like back to human. Like everything that I think of health now is going back to our roots.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, well, what is, certain medications can be helpful, right? Or like certain modalities, maybe they're not even a traditional medication, but what do they do is they mimic nature, or they, you know, they get us back to that human like space.
Right.
Right. So right. It's just all it is that.
Yeah. And you look at a lot of pharmaceuticals, I talked about this on a recent episode too, and they're trying to mimic some naturally occurring herb or something, some mineral or something like that in nature. But a lot of the times what happens is they're stripping the, I guess you could say, electromagnetic or bioenergetic signature of the plant that is something that human beings cannot truly grasp or appreciate or understand. Mm. Is the inherent energetic nature to the natural world that we try to mimic with all these things, especially again from pharmaceutical context or a nutrition context, that is just not the same thing. It's never the same thing.
It's not. And even what biohacking, like I appreciate some of the biohacking stuff. I'm not in that world necessarily, but what are they all doing? They're trying to get you back to nature, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to do a cold blunge. I mean, I have a sauna, I have a cold plunge,
right.
But that's just mimicking nature. It's like red light. It's like, well, you're just mimicking the sun, right. You know, like
sun in a hot environment. That's all you're doing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you're enjoying this episode, please consider sharing it with at least one friend or family member who you think could benefit from hearing it. You help us grow and reach more people by sharing it with those around you. Also, be sure to head to the show notes to check out our membership offerings, membership marketplace, and more. We all know that Big Ag is poisoning our food supply, and Big Pharma's so-called medicine is straight up poison. What most people aren't aware of, though, is that most supplements are also filled with artificial sweeteners, dyes, GMOs, glyphosate, and a host of other toxic ingredients, even many of the more natural supplements. My good buddy James Benefico dedicated his life to crafting the world's cleanest, most nutritious organic supplements after a pre-workout energy drink caused heart palpitations so severe that he almost landed up in the ER. Organic Muscle was born, revolutionizing sports nutrition by using exclusively non-GMO ingredients from USDA organic farms. Since then, tens of thousands of people, including myself, have leveled up their fitness and their health with Organic Muscle's award-winning natural pre-workout. There's no jitters, no heart palpitations, no itchy skin, just nourishing organic food and herb-based ingredients for clean, sustained energy, strength, endurance, and recovery. Numerous studies have shown that tonka ali is the most effective herb in the world for naturally boosting testosterone levels. And we know that testosterone levels are depleting all over the world because of what's put in the food supply, what we're exposed to. Organic Muscle has the world's first fully organic tonka ali supplement. I only support and promote things that I actually use, and I can say I legitimately use Organic Muscle products. Use code FORWARD15 at checkout for 15% off at organicmuscle.com.
Okay, so now I want to talk about the sort of nuanced approach within the carnivore scene, if you will. Like, you have the Sean Baker approach, where he swears that you don't need to eat organ meats. You can just eat a ribeye every day, or multiple ribeyes a day, or multiple cuts of steak. You don't need to even focus on organ meats, and you don't need to eat any fruit or anything like that. Versus Paul Saladino comes from the thought that, you know, he previously thought that you could just thrive exclusively on meat, but then he's started, as of the last few years, implementing a lot of fruit and honey and things like this. So what is your general take on eating nose to tail?
Mm. Well, it's the name of my company, so I think I have a bias. Well, right. That's just the, yeah, it's a bias for a reason. It's just because that's what I believe. I've known both these guys before they were known.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I found them both before anyone knew who they were.
Wow.
And Sean Baker was my first interview 6 years ago. And then...
Is he massive in person?
Yeah, he's huge. He's so
big. He's tall too, right?
Super tall.
Wow.
Yeah, he's gigantic. He like crushed me when I first said hello to him. His hand... Yeah. So I do not agree with Sean at all. He is doing fine. I think some of his blood tests, he talks about some of his stuff openly.
Mm-hmm.
And it just isn't that ideal. And yeah, Paul, I think I was in Paul's ear a little bit, because the whole time he was strict carnivore, I was like, what's wrong with like pickles, buddy?
Right.
You know, or like some little fermented vegetables or something. Or yeah, I'm glad he came around. And I think he's influenced a lot of people, including me. So yeah, mm-hmm. I do credit him to, you know, he's like talking about fruit and talking about his journey and kind of being wrong, right? Switching his idea.
Yeah. Which, but I really appreciate the humility, yeah, in that.
Absolutely. And so there's this idea, and I forget what it's called. And I think his name is Dr. Bruce Ames. He's some PhD that I don't think I agree with on a lot of things, but he has this idea of you store nutrients. It's like this nutrient store. Your body is a nutrient store. And I think we can store nutrients for even decades, and they can slowly be depleted, right? So I think with Sean's approach, he's getting so much nutrition from fresh meat, especially. He's getting a lot of like thick, you know, that's from fresh meat. There's still blood in that thing, right? You're eating it medium rare. He's eating eggs. He's eating fish. He's eating some dairy. So he's getting a lot. And he's also a massive guy, like you said. I think he's gradually kind of drawing down some of his nutrients. Also think that we don't need all that we think we need, right? That it's pretty incredible that we need tons of vitamin C or you can get scurvy. He's like, I'm not getting scurvy.
Dude, I don't want to go off on a tangent. We'll get to this at some point, but I just mentioned before we clicked record that I did a 15-day water fast, and I have completely flipped the way that I look at nutrition in general, and I still eat a lot of meat. So we'll get to that.
No, this is, yes, this could tie into that.
Okay,
right? Because I think that, yes, your body is incredible and it has these nutrient stores. And I think that's why people can do well on vegan diets and then they don't do well. And I still want to know about your buddies.
Yeah, dude, let's just go there now. I think it makes sense to you.
It's all going to tie in.
Yeah, it'll all tie in anyway. That's fine. So First, I want to touch on my water fasting experience and in the way that I have come to, after that experience, look at nutrition in general. Granted, I only did 15 days, but I have interviewed self-proclaimed breatharians who, I got to say, Jazz Mahin, I interviewed her. I do believe that she's a breatharian. I've met other people. And then like my friend Rodney, mm-hmm. who I'm interviewing in a few months, I lived with him for 30 days. The dude only eats a little bit of fruit here and there. And then drinks his own pee. And that's like, that's a whole separate conversation, but he crushes in the gym. He's ripped. He has so much energy, but he does a ton of breath work. He spends hours in the sun, hours and hours and hours. He lives in Florida. He eats fresh fruit that he picks from the trees himself. He spends a lot of time on himself. He really focuses on feeling his emotions as they arise. And you know, if he does drink water for Rodney and then other breatharians that I know, they're drinking water that's directly from a spring or drinking water that they make sure is filtered of fluoride and things like this, that they're bringing back into coherence with a vortexing device or something like that. But the point is, all of those people that I know and my own direct experience have completely shifted the way that I look at nutrition. And I look at, for the most part, this is a very general statement, mm-hmm. that we receive nourishment as human beings in a number of ways, primarily with most people, that being through food. But for people who become more adept at converting, let's say, their breath, like the prana that is ever present in the air, like we talk about something like dark matter. I don't think there's anything that's dark matter. I think that we are swimming in a field of potential energy that is ether. And we've just been misled on that. So when you're breathing, it's more than just breathing in oxygen and breathing out CO2. Mm-hmm. You are breathing in chi. You're breathing in life force energy that is abundant and available. And in general, our bodies can convert various forms of potential energy into energy for use for the body at the cellular level. And I look at nutrition in a completely different way, where the most bioavailable energy that we know of or that we can consume is animal products by far. And mm-hmm. that I think it is imbued with the most chi. Now, I know a lot of vegans and vegetarians that do listen to my podcast would disagree with me. And I could say that there's some nuance there because I do know people who have been on a vegan diet for 30 to 40 years or been fruitarian for 30 to 40 years that are crushing. And it's like, that's an outlier, or maybe we just completely misunderstand how the human body works, even on a nutritional level. So I know I just threw a lot at you, but that's kind of where my head's at lately.
This is very interesting. These people that have been doing it, I don't not believe them, because mm-hmm. it sounds like you've lived with this guy.
Dude,
for
I lived with him. Like, I was so skeptical when he said that this is what he wanted to speak on at my conference before he showed up speaking to my friend Rodney. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't even know if I want to allow him to get on mm-hmm. stage to talk about this. It's going to be so off-putting. I did, you know, I didn't want to censor him. That would go against what my whole organization was mm-hmm. about at the time. But then after he spoke and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he went there. I lived with him and I saw how he was every day. And since knowing Rodney and just going down the rabbit hole on just the metaphysical, etheric, esoteric knowledge with respect to health in the human body, I've met several other people who have, I won't say the identical story to Rodney's, but similar stories. And I'll show you who I'm talking about after we get done recording. But dude, it's blown my mind. It's blown my mind.
I'd love them to be studied.
Yeah.
I really would love to see that. So I can't really comment on that, but I'll go where I was going to go with this about the body. And I think Bruce Ames, it was a triage theory. I think that's what he calls it, is that your body will use things as needed. And, you know, if you take in food, so I don't know how it's even possible to take in things, these non-nutritive substances, and somehow like build your body and give it enough energy and materials to keep going. So I have no comment on that, but for someone who can go vegan for 30 to 40 years, I think they might be slowly doing bad things. I think they had this foundation of nutrition that they got growing up. And then when they made this decision to do that, that they've just been like barely sustaining since then, and that the body can store these nutrients, but then it leaches out nutrients. A lot of vegans have problems with their bone, like osteoporosis or or like,
I mean, you see that story pop up all the time too, where people were vegan for extended periods of time and then eventually have to switch back to eating animal products. And
yeah,
I was of the same mindset, and that's where it's like crazy meeting these people and like knowing them and again, living with them. And it flies in the face of what I thought. I'm like, what the hell?
Well, yeah. I mean, a little can go a long way too. I've heard that some people are vegan, or I know these some people personally that are, they really believe in veganism, and they mostly are, they're like plant based, but they'll eat oysters once in a while.
Right.
Right. And then, but those oysters, a little goes a long way, right?
Totally.
It has so much zinc and copper and iron and manganese, all these like crazy things, B12, that the plants don't have. And then maybe that's enough. Mm. And maybe that's okay. I think this is how humans survived all of history, because maybe there were times when there were no animals, like something happened, right? And we couldn't get animals for a year. I don't know if that's possible, because we're pretty successful hunters. I saw these guys, if they saw it, it was food.
No way.
They saw it, it was food. Yeah, it's just like, oh.
They're talking about like air, land, or sea. I mean, maybe not sea, but air or land.
If they saw it, it was food. It was crazy. So throughout history, I don't know. Yeah, maybe there was a month. We'll call it a month that went by. We, for some reason, couldn't get anything. And then we can get some. But so our body has this fallback state.
Right.
And it can survive on this completely different diet. That's why I don't have a specific dietary thing that this is what everyone needs to do.
Yours is more general, right?
Yeah, guys like Paul Saladino, Sean Baker, they're just like, meat, you have to be meat, animal-based, it's the only way to go, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, well, how do you explain all these, there's millions, billions of people around the world that don't do this, and they're okay.
Right.
I mean, there's also billions of people around the world with diabetes, pre-diabetes.
That's true.
Sick, but skinny, fat.
To your point, though, like, you know, Paul and Sean and others, Dr. Ken Berry, they're really big on eating primarily red meat, right? But you look at cultures around the world who don't even have access to that, who are also crushing without eating any red meat whatsoever.
Well, these cultures, they also do. They eat smaller animals, or they eat lamb. No, there's a lot more to this discussion. I think, yeah, they don't eat cows, but then they will eat other, yeah. And also, it doesn't need to be red meat. You could eat fish and vegetables your whole life and be fine.
Exactly.
So that's, so okay. So if you zoom out, that's why I don't like to get stuck in these camps. I over the years, I've become camp, no camp, right? It's just, I'm just zooming out. It's kind of a camp in itself, though. That's that's the irony. Like, I am in a camp.
Shit.
But camp, it's no camp.
Camp has become a camp.
Exactly. But no, I keep trying to just not be in a camp and like, I don't want to be wrong, or, you know, you don't want to have these things that disprove your theory. And if your theory is that red meat is the all you need, and then there's someone who's never ate red meat in their whole life, then it disproves your theory. But my theory is not based around red meat.
Right.
It's just around general nutrient density in animal nutrition and having some of this that, you know, it's just, we have science that we know that animal nutrition is more bioavailable and complete. Right. So it's like, but then it can be fish. Like I said, you can just eat fish. The Okinawans, they ate like fish and sweet potatoes and some plants, and they were fine.
Yeah.
All right. And they live a long time. And they also do a million other healthy lifestyle things. They're walking, they're getting sun, their sense of purpose, community, right? All that stuff. The blue zones is a whole nother story. But they're doing a lot of good things correctly in the blue zones, right? And they're eating whole foods. But I can see how these blue zones exist. Like Sean Baker, I don't know if his brain like melts down when he thinks about the blue zones, because, you know, there are people that can live to 100
right
without eating tons of red, you know?
Right,
and so, so you have to look at that. And part of it is your body can store it. I guess that's the main point, is that even 15 days, absolutely. Your body's built for this. Your body's built to go through times when we couldn't get a hunt.
Totally.
And it's fine.
Do you think that in addition to your body can survive based on what it's already stored, there might be an alchemical process that is possible within the body? Because I look at something like, let's say, a chicken, right? A chicken eating a very, very relatively small amount of calcium. But then when a chicken lays an egg, the amount of calcium in that eggshell indicates that there is some alchemical process that the chicken is going through to convert whatever it is eating into calcium in some form. So there's some form of alchemy that is present. That, and then I'd say the other ancillary to that would be that it's possible that the electromagnetic signature of a thing, right, is more important than the chemical components of a thing. And just because with our limited human capacity, we aren't able to fully understand that, then we, our brains kind of have this moment of, oh, wait, what the hell? That flies in the face of what I know. Like for my example of literally living with Rodney, I was like, what this goes against everything that I've been advocating for myself. You know,
there's a lot we don't know.
Right.
All of that. There is so much out there that I don't pretend that I'll ever know. So that's one thing. Too, with the alchemy part, that there is some, I mean, I don't think it's alchemy. Alchemy, I mean, it's turning lead into gold, right? I mean,
transmutation.
But yes, but something, okay. So a good example is a cow. A cow has four stomachs. It has an entirely different digestive process than we do. And it can wander around and eat grass, right? It's just cellulose, right? This is undigestible to humans. It's just random grass and shrubs and forages. Mm. And they build their bodies into gigantic hundreds and hundreds of pounds of muscle. So that's the same thing with the chicken. So I'm not well versed in the actual biochemistry of this, but I know that they have rumen, right? There's the four stomachs and it ferments, right? These plant matters ferment and they have all these microbes that digest this and then turn it into fatty acids. So actually cows run on fat, and it's these fatty acids produced by these bacteria that eat it. And then that it creates this in their body and it all works. So the layman's view of it is that that's how animals work, is that we don't have to eat protein. Like cows have a very low protein diet, yet they're made of protein, and we eat their protein. That's called meat. So it's not alchemy. I wish I was a biochemist and I could actually give you a better explanation of this, but that's just how the human body works. It's the same thing with cholesterol in the opposite way. It's not that we just eat cholesterol and then it just goes in our arteries.
Right.
That's just not how it works. Right. It's like, oh, well, you put fat down the drain and then clogs the drain. Like, that's not how our body.
Yeah. And I guess I meant more specifically, like, relating the creation of the calcium in the egg, right? Because that amount of calcium, that concentration of calcium, is not present in the chicken, nor is it present in the chicken's diet. But in the egg itself, that amount of calcium and that concentration is very huge. So maybe alchemy is not the correct word.
There's
got
to be a term. I should look this up, because there's something to it. It's just that the chicken can create it.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Somehow. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And there's actually another side story to that, is that like a human, it uses a lot of nutrients to have a baby. And if you have a baby too soon, you can actually, it will not be as successful, or it will not be as tall, will not thrive as much. So people know this. Like, I was the firstborn child, and my brother was just like, you know, like slightly shorter, slightly different than me. And that humans throughout history knew this. And so they would space out pregnancies. Wow. They know that the body needs a chance to rebuild all those stores, right? To make a baby, you're getting all the stores. Over time, it's like the human body, the mother is like getting all of these things from her body, putting them into the child, right? And that you need to have time to replenish that.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Wow. Okay, where do we go from
here? Oh, yeah. Wait, so we left off on this. So Sean Baker and
Sean.
So I guess we can close that out, in that humans always do this. The Weston Price studies and travels prove that for all of history, we ate animals nose to tail. We didn't waste. The healthiest countries, actually, I've gone to some of the blue zones. Some of my nutrition peers have gone to some of the blue zones, and they're saying they didn't eat red meat, and they didn't. But they were eating goat, and they didn't even count it. The side story is they didn't even count it as red meat, because they have a different term for meat and goat, or lamb. And they were eating the whole animal, nose to tail. They were eating the liver. They're eating the organs. They're saving the fat. So from every culture that we know about, they use the entire animal. Why would you waste it? And so, but that doesn't mean it's absolutely required. So kind of to close that out, it's kind of like, yes, it's a lot better to eat these things, and I try to include them on my diet. I mean, I don't particularly want to eat liver all the time, and it tastes a little weird, and I find ways to sneak it in my diet. So it's not like absolutely required, which is what Sean Baker says, but it can make you optimal, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what Paul would say. It's like, you want to include these. This is what we've always had. And so it's more about thriving. And so I think that's a bigger story too, is with all of modern people, it's the difference between survival and thrival. They're like, oh, this guy, like, he just ate cereal and bread and pasta and whatever, you know, for his whole life, and he's 100. I'm like, yeah, he's in a hospital bed,
right? Or he's like, yeah, he's 80, he's 85, and it's like he can barely move. I want to be sprinting when I'm 85.
Exactly. That's why I follow Mark Sisson.
Yeah.
Right? Like he just turned 70.
Yeah.
And he's a beast.
Yeah. Like, exactly. Yeah. I want to talk now about raw meat a little bit. I know we brought it up with the Hadza and they ate, you said they ate the baboon, or was it the baboon's liver raw too?
I don't know. I'm assuming they did. Okay. I did not take part in that baboon.
Well, I had a thought on this, right? As I've been studying nutrition and I know the guy behind Raw Meat Experiment. I don't know if you follow that account. I know him pretty well, and I'm actually supposed to interview him sometime this summer. He's also hilarious, and he's on Raw Chicken Experiment now, where he's on like day 40 of eating exclusively raw chicken, which really says a lot too. And I had always thought that when I would order duck at a restaurant, they're like, oh, you can get duck medium rare. I'm like, why can you get duck medium rare? And that's poultry, but you can't get chicken medium rare. I think it's because of the way that the animal is raised. It's not that there's quote bacteria that are going to be pathogenic inside of it. It's that the way that the chicken is pumped with hormones, antibiotics, et cetera. But all that to say, when we look at species across the world, let's speak specifically to mammals, there aren't other mammals who are cooking their food. Do you think that there is an argument? Because I know some raw foodists who are not raw in the vegan or vegetarian context. They're raw in the like, no, I eat exclusively raw meat and we shouldn't be cooking our meat. Do you think that there's legitimacy to that argument in any way?
I love this one. There's some nuance there.
Okay.
So I think raw meat is perfectly fine. And for much of history, we were eating raw meat because we didn't develop fire yet.
Yeah.
And I think it retains some of the nutrients, right? With liver, you retain all the vitamin C. And even with it, normal muscle meat, this is stuff that Sean Baker talks about. It's like if you're eating fresh meat, you are getting a little bit of vitamin C, right? So we just don't understand. Like, I mean, so we'll say with the sailors that got scurvy, they weren't eating fresh meat.
Right.
They had like beef jerky, basically, right? Yeah. And they're eating like hardtack and like some jerky. And then, yes, that has no vitamin C because it's completely dead. So that's a good point for, yes, you should be eating raw sometimes, some foods, because you can get more of the nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there could be some safety issues. Yes, I think it's how the animal's raised matters a lot. So I wouldn't be eating like random grocery. I don't know. Is a raw meat guy eating grocery store
chicken?
Dude,
he's buying organic chicken from like, pasture-raised chicken from grocery stores.
Okay. But it's still pasture-raised organic.
But that's the point, is it's still pasture-raised.
Okay. I mean, it'd be better if you got it from an actual ranch or something.
So, absolutely.
So there could be some safety issues. I know someone who got sick recently from eating raw heart.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait.
Animal-based female. Bay.
Yeah. My wife just brought
Lindsay,
that up today.
Yeah. She's in Austin. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So there could be some problems. And also, I mean, it's just, is it necessary? So as I learned about the nutrition world, there's kind of a spectrum of the more processed it is, the worse it is, right? Especially with processed foods and, like I said, carbohydrates, especially because they grind down. They're not in their whole form. They interact with your gut differently, blah, blah, blah. So the more refined something is, I think the more fat gain you can get. And the rawer it is, the more fat loss you can get. So a lot of people go raw anything and they'll lose weight. And this is just because it's harder for your body to get all of the nutrients out of it. So it's weird because I said you can get more nutrients, right? I think you can get some of the vitamins and minerals out of it, but you're going to get less of the energy, right? The protein and the energy, so that people who become raw vegan, they become sickly and malnourished. You've seen these people and they're like wasting away.
Absolutely.
And I think you could do that if you're just eating raw meat only, that you for too long, you could be just not getting all that you need unless you're like really forcing it down. So it's kind of like a weight loss hack, in that the more whole and raw your foods are, the harder your body it is to digest it.
So it's like a bell curve almost. Like maybe at certain points, it's good for you. Then after some time, it might not be beneficial.
You could just not be getting enough nutrients and energy out of your food. And so then there's another part of the story is just humans, like we are Homo sapiens. Like we learned to use tools and we learned to use fire, right? And that's what helped us. Right. That's what helped us is so before. Yeah, it's I think it does just give us more access to the nutrition and that helped us over time. So it's still possible, but it's just not necessary.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is a good segue into talking about defense chemicals in plants, because a lot of people will say that if you're eating raw, especially raw vegetables, it's actually not good for you really at all because of the defense chemicals. What's your position on defense chemicals in plants?
I've had firsthand experience with this, and I think there's something to it. And it's, again, it happens when you go away from nature, mm-hmm. right? So it's always going to go back to that, actually. But so throughout history, we ate in season, right? And we had these certain vegetables, these certain plants at a certain time. We ate them. We're good. Your body can detoxify from those things. These are real things. There are oxalates in food. Mm-hmm. There are oxalates in spinach and almonds and stuff like that. There are lectins and things. There are.
That's why Weston A. Price as an organization always says that you're supposed to soak seeds before eating them.
Yep.
Yeah, you're not supposed to eat them raw.
And there's so many things. Lectins, you need to pressure cook beans. You need to prepare things properly. Yeah, that's part of the Weston Price Foundation, is that they're continuing to help people understand the proper preparation techniques. Mm-hmm. And so I believe in all of that. And seasonal eating. Before I just thought seasonal eating was just, you know, a thing people talked about. But then I realized there's a specific reason for that, is because plants do have natural defense mechanisms, right? This is, the story goes, right? They can't run away or protect themselves. So they produce these chemicals or things like oxalates to make them non-attractive or make the animals sick that are eating them. Mm. And so I'll tell you my firsthand experience. So in the beginning of my health journey, I started drinking these kale and spinach and almond milk shakes every morning, right? And so I was doing all these things, and I was cutting out the bad processed foods, but also doing this. So I did feel better, and I was swearing by it. And I did this for 2 years. Almost every day, I would drink this thing. And then I learned about oxalates. That is basically a cup of oxalates. So this is way out of ratio from nature, right? You're drinking all this stuff. I think it ruined my gut. I had terrible skin problems.
Really?
Terrible. It was a nightmare. My face was all red and peeling and stuff. And I stopped. I stopped. That all that stuff went away. And I lost like 7 pounds of fat. So I was already, I thought I was in shape. And I was doing all the right things, cut out this shake, which was supposedly amazing for you, and lost. And I felt so much better. All this inflammation just went away.
Wow.
And I just got thinner and, you know, in a good way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Just body fat went down and felt great ever since. And then, so that was, oh man, maybe 3 or 4 years ago when I stopped. Maybe over 4 years ago. Then I took one of those green shakes, you know, those like AG1 type of things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, okay, I haven't eaten this stuff in a long time. I'm just going to drink this thing. Some company sent it to me. They're like, oh, try it out. I drank it. Okay, I eat the same thing almost every day. Same types of things. My diet's pretty consistent. Drank this thing on some random Wednesday. Woke up in the middle of the night, and I was like peeing fire. I had like a kidney stone. Immediately triggered oxalate. So this is oxalate. So people get kidney stones from... Kidney stones are made of calcium oxalate. It's basically when your body just like collects all the calcium oxalates, the sharp crystals, and they go in your bladder or something. So basically, I don't know the exact mechanism because it was so soon how it happened, but it was absolutely that. There is no question in my mind that that was the only thing that I did differently, and woke up in the middle of the night, and for an hour, it was just like fire.
Oh, man.
So I believe, yeah, so I don't need oxalates.
Wow.
So I'm still like kind of detoxing from these oxalates.
So do you think the people who are doing juice cleanses that refer back to their benefits are largely people who switch from eating a standard American diet? So this is a step up, but then over some time, they start having these negative health effects if they're almost exclusively doing juice, because it's like, okay, now you've reached the maximum benefit within this context, and now you're just getting all of these oxalates that are bad for you at this point.
Kind of. Well, anything can be okay in the short period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
In moderation.
I'm saying 2 years of this, and it wasn't even juiced. It was like the full plant.
Yeah,
it was just blended.
Got it.
So yeah, I'm perfectly fine with people doing juice cleanses or eat it. You could eat all the kale you want for a summer, you know, whenever that's in season, and you're going to be fine, because for the rest of the year, you're not going to have it, and your body can just get rid of them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to touch on now how do I put this? The spiritual implications of eating meat. So this is something that I have struggled with myself. And I say this as someone who, you know, just before this had a bunch of like steak and eggs. So I eat meat myself. I eat organ meats. I'm open about that on my show, but I still struggle with the consumption of life. And this is the example that I was going to bring up earlier. A good friend of mine, Aaron Abke, who's been eating grass-fed, grass-finished, nose-to-tail for the past 2.5 years, eating like basically a ribeye a day, has now adopted a diet which comes from the Essene Gospel of Peace. And so this is his nuanced approach. And like Aaron is a super fit dude, trained, all, I think, professionally for a while as a CrossFit athlete, really fit guy. Again, been eating nose-to-tail for the last 2.5 years plus. But over the last month and a half, he's switched to this Essene Gospel of Peace diet, which still incorporates animal products, but not life of the animal. And it's for metaphysical / spiritual reasons, because it's, there's karmic implications according to the Essene Gospel. And it made some sense to me. But he's still incorporating, as is permitted in this diet, raw milk and eggs, and then a little bit of fish. Do you think that there's a possible approach where that is okay in that context and not eating any red meat, and you can still thrive on that diet?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No, I absolutely. No, this is my whole thing. This is why I keep zooming out and like trying to not be wrong.
Right.
Because I know that people have lived this way, or there's certain areas where this is all they had access to, or for religious reasons. It's like animal foods are so nutrient dense, and humans are so interesting. We've always, actually, from the studies of Weston Price and other people, we found that humans always get as many animal foods as they can from their environment.
Mm-hmm.
They eat, so if they're eating a small amount, that's because they can only get that amount. They're always eating as much as they can, and they're filling in the other plant foods around that. But there's no reason.
You're saying like the nutritional gaps they'll fill in with other things, they'll supplement with other things, yeah, for whatever they can't get in animal context.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. Yeah. They're just, yeah. And so there's nothing wrong with that. You're getting so much complete protein, vitamins, minerals from, you don't even need to eat the fish.
If raw milk and eggs,
I mean, I wouldn't do it, but I mean, that's a vegetarian diet, right? That's right. A vegetarian diet, even excluding the fish. And if you eat enough of that, and then you're eating whole foods and you're eating properly, you can be perfectly fine for your entire life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. I like that.
Cause no. I've been wrestling with this, man. Cause I've just wanted to give it a try based on like Aaron experimenting with it. I'm like, man, I just want to try this just to see if I can. Cause I feel pretty good eating the way that I'm currently eating. And at the same time, like I'll say this, and I'm well versed in all the arguments towards vegans on why their idea that veganism preserves life is totally wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Like I already know that. You know, really good friend of mine, Molly Engelhart, she's a regenerative farmer. Her brother's the CEO, I think that's the correct position, of Kiss the Ground, the regenerative agricultural organization. So I do events on her regenerative ranch in Bandera, Texas. She's a really good friend of mine. And she was previously vegan until she became a regenerative farmer. And then she realized that the idea that veganism preserves life is complete nonsense. Whether it's in an organic farming context or a monocrop farming context, does not matter. Across that full spectrum, absolutely does not preserve life. People that try veganic farming methods always end up failing. There's no way you can ever farm in a large scale context without animal inputs. There's just no way. Point is though, that with that understanding, like I struggle with, at the very least, consuming meat that I did not engage with myself and kill and prepare the animal. And I don't know why. And maybe that's just me. I really struggle with that. But have you ever like thought about that at all?
I have. I do not have that problem. I mean, I get my own animals from nose to tail, and I know my ranchers, and so
that's huge though, because most
great.
People don't.
Yeah,
most,
but I mean, that's don't. Not all I eat though.
Right.
I mean, people think that's all I eat just because I have that company, but I mean, we're not always in stock. I don't always have it on hand. I am perfectly fine eating, you know, at a restaurant or with other people. I mean, I don't eat out often at all, actually. People are like, "Oh, you live in Austin? How are the restaurants?" Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I honestly have been
to
like
a picnic.
Four restaurants.
At least they use Force of Nature meats there.
I've been to Picnic once. I've been to each place once.
Okay.
I've literally ate at a Picnic once. I've ate at the well once.
Yeah, everyone
talked about at Ziki. They are like no seed oils. I've eaten there twice. Like really, it's really slim. How either way, you don't have to do that. It's just what I've landed on. But I think that the ethical part, I think people just have to do what makes them feel good, right?
It's
it's like, I think actually the more I get into the food stuff, the more I realize how much of a mental side and psychological side there is.
Totally.
Right? It's like So this is what my strategy, though. That's why I do go out to eat, or I say, if someone makes me something, I eat it. Because if you're so stressed out about it, it's going to make things worse.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. It's like, so I went to an event and I was there all day and all they had was pizza. Right? And then everyone's like, oh, dude, what are you going to do? I'm like, you're the food lies guy. I'm like, I'm going to eat the pizza. And I'm not going to feel bad about it. I'm going to be like, I'm at this fun event. I'm with my friends. We're going to eat some pizza and I'm going to move on with my life.
I appreciate that so much. Cause that's so, I don't know how much you know about my story. Long story short, my wife reversed two autoimmune conditions by adopting what was first a Whole30 diet, transitioning to paleo. Then we adopted, I'd say, an ancestral diet over the last few years. So then this has been like an 8-year journey for us. And there was a period of time where we were so obsessive and strict about what we ate that we were like, oh, I will not eat out at any restaurant, or, oh, we can't go to their house because they're going to be serving X, Y, and Z and we don't know what's going to be in it. And we're just too afraid that we're going to have a negative reaction to it, blah, 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 blah. And then we finally got to a point that, like, same as you, if I go to a gathering, I'm going to have a fucking pizza and I'm going to be totally okay with it. Cause I know that this component is what impacts the way that my body can take in this material more in my eating it. And of course there's nuance to that. Cause if you're eating fucking pizza every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's not going to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it just on an occasion, I think it's totally fine, especially because you've cleaned your being so well to that your body can detoxify properly by having a pizza every so often.
Yeah. Yeah. It's your overall health. And that's why I always put it on the month scale or the longer scale. You have to zoom out to that. And that's why it won't work every day, no matter how much you think. You're just crushing fast food and trash all day and think, you know, trying to like make yourself think that it's good. It's not going to work, but it's zooming out. And also, I mean, there's even studies that show the opposite, where that if you think negative or like if you think that something is unhealthy, your body has a different response to it. They had these like two milkshakes that one they said was like a healthy one and one they said was like a junk food one. And the people, they were the same. It was actually the same milkshake. But the people who thought it was unhealthy, they had more of a blood sugar response to it. Wow. Or another study where people, I think it was a study where they're eating on the go. And like, if you're like actually like eating while driving, something like that, or eating like while watching like a action film or something, and their body had a different response to it. Because especially while driving, your body is in like kind of a flight or fight state. And then those, even though it was the same calories, it affected you differently.
Yeah, I've heard you mention this on a podcast, and this is a perfect segue into talking about Blue Zones and Sapien Center. And then I want to touch on some of the predominant themes in your Food Lies series, because I'm so excited to check that out. But I think the intentionality of eating, as we're talking about here, is such a major factor. And like you've said before, when we look at the Blue Zones, they were eating in community. Is that something that you're trying to mimic with what you're doing with Sapien Center, just gathering with like-minded people?
That's it. I was in LA before. I was in Venice Beach. And
what year? Up until when?
This was up until COVID.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Then I had to get out of there. As soon as my lease ran out, I drove here immediately.
How did you end up here? Why
oh,
here?
I've been visiting Austin for 9 years.
Got it. Okay.
So yeah, I knew there was this community building. So exactly. So yep. Once it was a nightmare in California. No one should ever live in California. It's so beautiful, but it's terrible.
It is, man. There is some rad people left though. And that's what's so tough is it's beautiful and there is some rad people left.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people are sticking out.
Right.
Okay. So I knew this community was forming and I realized I had a bunch of community, but I wasn't with them. Right. That's all that matters. That's why social media is fake. It's like, yes, you can have a lot of friends, but it's like, you're not actually with them.
Right.
Right. So it's like back to human, back to nature is being around people. We, for all of history, we're with each other. And so I knew in Austin I could do that. And instead of like what is my perfect day? I did this whole experiment of like, what is your perfect day if I had all the money in the world? Okay. What's a random Wednesday? What's your perfect Wednesday? If I had all the money in the world. And I would say I wake up without an alarm. I'd work on something I cared about. I would have lunch with a friend. I would work on something I cared about again for the afternoon. I'd do some movement, some sort of sports. And then I would have dinner. I'd have a barbecue with my friends. And for one, I realized all that was free. I didn't need any money to do that. And then I was just, and I just thought, okay, how can I do that better? Right? How, like, that's what humans want, right? This is what we've come from. And so, yeah, so I moved to Austin to do that, right? And I started Sabian Center, which is just a social club and event center where like-minded people get together. It's just a physical hub. But other people can do this without having, you know, a Sabian Center in their town. It's like, how do you live more like the Blue Zones people or live like humans are meant to live? And it could be as simple, I don't know, starting a group, right? Like, how do you just get that? Because humans need that interaction, right? They need that community around them. And I think that's one of the most important things that the Blue Zones, it's like they're eating whole foods, that, right? Whether they're plants or animals, they were whole, mm-hmm. right? They were from nature. They were moving. They were out in nature, movement, sunlight, all that. And they had community and sense of purpose. Of course they're going to live long. That doesn't tell me. I don't know. It's really irritating that Dan Buettner just made it into a vegetarian propaganda type thing. When I'm like, what Blue Zones taught me is that you have to go back to nature and live like humans. That's it.
Right.
And we can still do that. And so, yeah, if we can help people do that in their own town, I'm trying to make Sapien more worldwide. So you called ancestral diet. I just started calling it Sapien. It's like, what is the term for this?
Right.
And I just keep calling it Sapien.
I love it.
What is, it's the way to eating. It's a way of living.
Yeah.
And so getting people on more of a worldwide scale, of like, how do people do this in their own town?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I have a good solution yet, but we're working on something with just getting people. Sapien Center is just a hub for that. You know,
yeah.
It just happens to be in Austin and that's our hub. But how do we allow people to do that in their own city? Meetups, right? Just having groups, having events. I don't know.
I have some ideas. We've been working on them with the Way Forward. So we'll talk about that. But the other thing that I want to talk about with Sapien Center is you're not just, it's not just gathering with people. You have movement classes and you have like a whole outdoor like workout yard. What all do you have going on there?
Yeah, inside we have co-working kind of during the day. We have a stage. We do events. We have outdoor gym, sauna, cold plunge. We have fire pit, grills. It's kind of just like the ultimate hangout, right?
Ultimate human spot.
Right. But it's so we do have, and yeah, all kinds of events. I mean, if anyone's listening, if you want to have an event in Austin, we have events every week and we allow people to partner with us and have events. We're actually showing Food Lies tonight.
Awesome.
We're going to show the first 15 minutes with a group of film people tonight. But it's kind of like, well, what is the ultimate goal is for that connection and interaction, right? So it's not the fact that we have an outdoor gym or we have a sauna. It's like, how do we create a space that provides interaction? And, you know, it's like, how do you become friends with someone? It's not like a formula.
Right.
It's that you hang out with them and you see them a lot and then you have some kind of common
similar
bonds.
Interests. And it's like, it's almost like you're flipping on its head the traditional, like, well, shit, where do you meet people? You either go to church or you do the other end of the spectrum. You go out drinking till 2 a.m. Right. And it's like, no. This is a completely different third way.
The third
is also helping you be healthy too.
Exactly. And people are getting healthier. It's great. Yeah. I think we are going to start letting other people open them or helping them open.
Totally
them.
Should. Yeah. That'll be awesome, man. Awesome. 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 So I want to touch on Food Lies for this last like few questions. So what was the idea behind the film? Was this something that you jumped into? I know your account on Instagram is called Food Lies. Was this something that you jumped into filming right after having this sort of transformation in your understanding of diet and nutrition, or what was the process for its creation for this film series?
Yeah, 10 years ago is when I had the family stuff, and I didn't start this 6 years ago. And so, I just basically left my job and just decided to go full-time. I saw one too many vegan films, actually. I just saw one of these vegan films 6 years ago, I remember, and I grew up doing film projects my whole life. And I actually teamed up with my good friend I grew up with in Hawaii, who's a filmmaker and producer, and we just did it. We're just like, let's just go all in. And I had no plan. I was making no money. I was just living off my savings. And then everything just kind of happened around it.
Wow.
I started the podcast, Peak Human. So that's kind of helped. I started the Nose to Tail company, started the Sapien Center. These are all these things that just kind of came around me because I just wanted to, just change people's mind about health. And And then things just happen from there. So
awesome. What are some of the, I know we've touched on quite a bit of them, I'd imagine, but what are some of the predominant themes in the Food Lies series? Or I guess, what are the things that you think the holistic health community, because I don't imagine there's any quote normies listening to my show, would find pretty shocking that you show in the series?
So the main goal was, well, it started out as a film, then it turned into a 6-part series, was to download all of this information into someone's head. Because people listening are probably at the far end of the spectrum that care, and they're listening to podcasts, they're seeking out this information. So I think there's going to be more to gain from the normies or people's friends, people who are already in this world, to get other people to understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Because people listening, put in the time, you know, you and I don't know how many books we've read, you know, how many conferences we've been to, how many interviews have we done, all this.
So you're distilling all that someone else.
No one's going to do that. And I'm trying to convert, say, my own family members.
Mm-hmm.
They don't listen to me. I meet people all around town. They're like, whatever, like, what evidence do you have? Or they're never going to read 100 books and do this for 6 years. So yeah, it's getting it all in one place. And it takes a 6-part series. It takes some platform, like maybe Netflix, if they'll take it.
I saw the trailer. The trailer was super well done. I'm like, wow, this is going to be incredible.
Thank you. Yeah. You should come down and see episode 1 tonight.
Man, I got to ask my wife. She's the boss, you know.
But the whole thing is well done. It's entertaining, right? We use storytelling, we use infographics, we use all the techniques to just make sure people get it. And if they actually watch these 6 episodes, which you will, because it's, you know, fun, entertaining, quick. It's not like we belabor, you know, some scientific study for 20 minutes. It's fun. They will understand everything. You won't be like, oh, but where's the study? Like, we'll have hundreds of studies,
right?
You know, it's kind of like the totality of all of this is what is going to let someone know that this is the truth.
Yeah. Right. It'll resonate with them so deeply, because it'll be, sort of be like, no duh.
Oh, it's a foregone conclusion. It's leading them to an inescapable conclusion.
Right.
That's actually the goal. That's our new thing. We're leading you to an inescapable conclusion, right? So you see the first episode and you're like, oh, this is how, you know, humans, our bodies changed because of this. And then we get through the bad science that was done. We get through the good science, the new science. And then we end on regenerative agriculture. So we show the entire story of why it's an inescapable conclusion that this is how humans thrive.
Yep. Wow, incredible. Wow, that'll be a perfect one to send to people then, to try to help wake up their friends and family. Incredible, man. Awesome. Is there anything else you want to share as we're closing up?
That's it. No, just go to Food Lies on Instagram. That's where I mainly am.
Is there any like crowdfunding or any more funds you need to?
Yeah,
to
we're always trying to crowdfund. I mean, I don't take the money. It goes to our composer, our graphic artists, like all these people. We're just doing all this work to do post-production. It's endless.
Yeah. So
that's foodlies.org.
Awesome.
And it's still open.
Awesome. Man, this is an awesome conversation. Thanks for joining me, Brian.
Thanks, man.
So many of us dream of buying some land, growing our own food, and becoming self-sufficient away from a society that's gone completely mad. What if it's easier than we think to make that dream a reality? Siblings Jamie and Shelby over at Living the Off-Grid Dream have cracked the code to getting land and living a life of freedom. They'll show you where to find land for $1 down, that's right, $1 down,
with low monthly payments, as well as how to structure your vision for a homestead, retreat center, regenerative farm, or community. It's one thing to have food, water, and land security, but it's an entirely different thing to have the financial security to buy the land and build it out in a way that aligns with your goals and aspirations. Their program teaches you how to make enough money on your land to cover all of your costs to make that happen. Plus, they've got you covered with pre-filled out plans to give you inspiration if you're not quite sure what your best move for your land is. And if you're a member of The Way Forward, you get a free one-on-one strategy call with Jamie and Shelby, as well as a free bonus gift. If you want to turn your homesteading, off-grid, or retreat center dreams into a reality, join living the off-grid dream by clicking the link in the show notes or heading to thewayforward.com/off-grid. In nearly all cases with modern health systems, you're waiting months for appointments only to spend a mere 10 minutes with a doctor who quickly hands out a generic diagnosis that is likely rooted in a total misunderstanding of health and causes, and then you're offered a one-size-fits-all medication or invasive treatments with unpleasant side effects. If this sounds all too familiar, consider a different approach with the New Biology Clinic, founded by Dr. Tom Cowan, a respected natural health doctor, author, and speaker. Dr. Cowan's holistic perspective on health and wellness and a deep understanding of the true nature of health and disease sets this clinic apart. With the New Biology Clinic, it's not about quick fixes and suppressing symptoms. The practitioners take time to understand your unique story, recognizing that health is unique to the individual and that illnesses have a variety of causes, physically and metaphysically. Members of the New Biology Clinic enjoy a flat monthly fee that includes a range of valuable services like health consults as needed, practitioner-led live streams on diverse health topics, access to a members-only resource library, and multiple live group sessions every month. These sessions cover fitness, breathing integration, biofield tuning, guided meditation, EFT tapping, and much more. Unlike traditional healthcare systems that thrive on frequent visits, prescriptions, treatments, and suppressing symptoms, the New Biology Clinic's motivation is to make you healthy and keep you that way. Visit newbiologyclinic.com to learn more and use code THEWAYFORWARD for $50 off your account activation. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com to receive $150 off your account activation. Your journey to genuine healing begins here.